Dr. Robert Madrid offered himself as an expert court witness after he moved to Anniston, Alabama in 2002. His credentials included degrees from Harvard Medical School and MIT, membership in Mensa. It turns out he was also a complete fraud. An investigation earlier this year revealed that almost nothing on Madrid's resume was true. Not the degrees, not the history, not even his birthday. Even his name can't be confirmed. Madrid invented it all to shed his past and become somebody else. Stories like that always sound surprising, but they're also an essential part of the American story. Take John Paul, for example, a hot-headed Scots ship captain who changed his name, fled to America, and as John Paul Jones, became a Revolutionary War hero revered as the founder of the United States Navy. Benjamin Franklin was apprenticed to his brother when he was 15, but broke the law and ran from Boston to Philadelphia and a new life. The apparently limitless frontier offered the temptation of individual reinvention. Second, third, or fourth chances to pick up, move, and start fresh. Immigrants could forget or change their ethnic or religious backgrounds. Businessmen get out from under bankruptcy. Criminals flee their records. It's the subject of books like The Great Gatsby and movies like Catch Me If You Can. Later in the program, The Faithful Spy, a reporter's novel about the CIA, Al-Qaeda, Iraq, and a life undercover. But first, reinventing one's identity. If you've ever found out that someone you knew was, in fact, somebody else, has anyone in your family ever created a new identity for him or herself? Have you ever been tempted to do so? We'd like to hear your stories. Our number here in Washington is 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. Email is talk@npr.org. And we begin with Brian McVeigh, an assistant district attorney for the 7th Judicial Circuit of Alabama. He's with us by phone from Broward County Sheriff's Office in Florida. Nice to have you with us today on the program, sir.
Thank you for having me.
You were the one who unmasked Robert Madrid, the fake doctor in Anniston, Alabama. What, in fact, tipped you off?
Well, we were preparing for a murder trial, and he was hired as an expert on the case.
Mm-hmm.
He gave us a CV of all his credentials. They just seemed too good to be true. So we began looking at papers he claimed to have written, places he claimed to have worked, schools he claimed to have attended, the normal things we would do preparing for a trial, hoping to find maybe one thing that he described about himself that was a little too flowery.
So you could discredit him on the stand.
Correct. And we found a whole lot more. Everything that he had said to us, as a matter of fact, was incorrect. There was only one workshop that he had attended in the entire resume that was accurate.
Is Robert Madrid even his name?
Well, we don't know that. When we had him, we put him on the stand. He pled the Fifth Amendment, refused to answer even where he was born or what his name was, told the judge he would not answer those questions because they would incriminate him. At his sentencing hearing, when he was sent to prison, he was only able to provide a driver's license. He had no Social Security number or any other documents that would identify that, in fact, was his real name.
I read at one point the judge said, can you tell us your date of birth? And he refused, and the judge said, sir?
Well, one of the problems with that, and I guess to some degree in his defense, he had multiple resumes as we went digging. Depending on where he testified and what he testified to, he would prepare a different resume, sort of tailoring himself towards that testimony. And he had claimed two or three different places of birth and dates of birth, so claiming any one of those as his real date of birth would, in effect, admit that he'd perjured himself by claiming the other date of birth at a previous time.
Mm-hmm. I gather that as he invented these new lives, he also came up with new wives from time to time.
He did. We followed, again, most of my searching was done through Google. I found the true authors of papers, tracked them down, talked to former people he was supposed to have worked with, kept hearing, I've never heard of this person. He claimed to be an ACC athlete at Maryland. I was unable to find any pictures of the teams during the years he would have been there with him in them. Just couldn't find anything. Mensa claimed he was not a member. And so we finally tracked down one ex-wife, and that was a treasure trove of information. He had been married early in his life while pretending to be a doctor to another doctor. They divorced. He moved to Utah, started an AM radio talk show, befriended the Attorney General of Utah, who then married him to a girl. They opened a pet grooming salon. It was a strange story.
Yeah, you got to watch out for those talk radio hosts.
I'm sure some of them are credible.
Well, maybe one or two. I wonder, as you now look back at it, you almost have to look back at this and say, how do we even take this guy seriously for 30 seconds?
Well, I think what happened was when he moved to our area, he had impressive credentials. He moved quickly and joined a church, a synagogue in our area, even though he was Catholic. Had his wife converted and gained some friends in the area because he was a very affable guy. He was good-looking, speaks very well. I mean, you would think he was highly educated.
Good golfer, I'm told.
Yes, a great golfer. That's how he met his partner, was playing golf at the FBI Academy in Quantico and introduced himself as some sort of government agent.
What's going to happen to him now?
He does 1 year in prison in the Alabama State Prison System, and then he'll come back up and finish the remaining 4 years of his term on probation through the Talladega County District Attorney's Office. Again, he pled the Fifth Amendment when I put him on the stand, but we tracked down other people to whom he had testified, and they were the ones that actually prosecuted him for the perjury.
Brian McVeigh, thanks very much. Appreciate it.
Thank you for having me.
Brian McVeigh, Assistant Attorney, District Attorney for the 7th Judicial Circuit of Alabama, with us today from the Broward County Sheriff's Office in the state of Florida. Again, do you know somebody who's fabricated their life, changed their identity for benign purposes or whatever? 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK. Email is talk@npr.org. And let's get Amy on the line. Amy calling from Buffalo, New York.
You know.
Very well, thank you.
Good. What I just wanted to say is I was a military brat all growing up, and from a benign standpoint, I would change myself. I actually have two names. Amy is my nickname. Amelia is my legal name. And I would actually use Amelia if it fit a certain area that I lived in, use Amy if it fit in another area, and really just change myself based on lessons learned from if I made a mistake at a past school. And I've actually, as an adult, I'm still kind of that way. I've moved a number of times, and if I've made mistakes, it almost has become kind of like a necessity for me, in the sense that that's how I get myself to start all over again. I always have this need to start over again if I make mistakes. So I think the military is really... I don't know if any other people out there listening were military brats and experienced the same thing, but you really do start to yearn to move if you feel like you've made mistakes. And
well, give us an example of how you change your life story.
Well, I was living on the West Coast and had just, you know, fallen into some negative financial situations, and I moved to Buffalo, and also in San Francisco I was around some negative people, and I moved to Buffalo, New York, and really just completely changed my life. So now, you know, it's just been completely different. I left that whole past behind and started fresh again, and got reacquainted with my faith, and just, you know, I don't know. It's been always extremely easy for me to do.
But did you make up, degrees from Harvard Medical School and that sort of thing?
No. Everything in regard to my qualifications and credentials are true and across, you know, true across the board. But when it comes to like personality styles and I guess like traits that I have, I've learned those that maybe might annoy people or turn people away, and I've really learned to hone myself. And I'm in sales, so it's, I guess that's really helped me in regard to meeting with different clients and things of that nature. But I guess it's been a good thing for me.
Amy, thanks very much. Good luck.
Thanks.
And
bye.
Good luck to both of you. The idea of reinvention has been a part of American history from the beginning. Expansive territory in the New World meant anybody could come over and simply become somebody else. Joining us now to talk about how this has been part of the American story is Stephen Bullock, a professor of history at Worcester Polytechnic Institute in Worcester, Massachusetts. He's with us from the studios of member station WICN in Worcester. Nice to have you today on Talk of the Nation.
Thank you for having me, Neil.
And Amy's story and Dr. Madrid's story, not unusual in the history of this country.
I think it's part of the American experience.
Why is this phenomenon of someone being someone else American, do you think?
I think it's particularly American because it's built into so much of our American culture. You know, our political culture is based upon its origin at a particular time in a revolution which creates, as Tom Paine, the great revolutionary pamphleteer, talked about, the ability to start the world again,
mm-hmm.
to just begin, start right from the beginning. Our religious tradition in early America was based around a Protestant view of a new birth, where you would literally become someone different. Our economic culture of the free market, that nothing is to remain the same, everything is to be subjected to the marketplace. Our ideal of the self-made man, Benjamin Franklin, who starts off in poverty and obscurity, and ends up becoming this world famous figure. It's something which is just about anywhere you look in American culture. There's this idea of being able to become something new.
And geography, as we've mentioned, played a huge part in it. What the old Jerry Lee Lewis song, "Down Every Road, There's Always One More City."
America is so big, so vast, that there's lots of opportunities for people to move into new areas, for groups to move into new areas. I think one of the most extraordinary stories is that of the Quakers, the Society of Friends, who are this persecuted small religious group in England, yet are able to come to America and run Pennsylvania for more than half a century. Here, a group that
they didn't change who they were.
No, but it's a group that they could not be who they were in England, I guess. So there is the more opportunity. In America, I suppose you might look maybe perhaps to the Mormons, who establish a new religion in the New World. And when it becomes difficult for them to settle in one place, they keep moving and eventually head out to Utah and establish a center where for many years, it was possible to practice polygamy. So mm-hmm. So the breadth of the nation allows people to become different.
Stay with us, Professor Bullock. We have to take a short break. When we come back, more about the history of self-reinvention in America and more of your calls. 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK. Email us, talk@npr.org. I'm Neil Conan. This is Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. British Earl Christopher Buckingham, it turns out, was really a Florida man named Charlie Stopford. For 20 years, he took on Lord Buckingham's identity until he was caught last year. In Alabama, we mentioned another man who created a new identity for himself and his family, who claimed to be an expert court witness with degrees from Harvard and MIT. We're talking today about the essential American story of reinventing yourself. Our guest is Stephen Bullock, a professor of history at Worcester Polytechnic Institute in Worcester, Massachusetts. And, of course, we want your stories. 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK. Our email address is talk@npr.org. And let's get Paul on the line. Paul's calling from Sunnyvale, California.
Hi there.
Hi, Paul.
Well, I've got a story that's almost as good as that one. It was a company doing government contracting, and we came across a gentleman who wanted to be a representative for us, and he was a retired rear admiral. So we hired him, and among the other things that he did is he took the entire company on board a nuclear carrier, whistled on board as an admiral, and we got a great tour. I personally visited with him to the commanding officer at Cherry Point Marine Station and had a great old boys talk. And got into a half a dozen other bases with him. He had the Congressional Medal of Honor and a Silver Star. He had a PhD in psychology from Berkeley and a photographic memory, and he was none of those. Another admiral we had on our board of directors got suspicious when he was invited to be the keynote speaker to the
some important address.
Anyway, it's a conference for the Navy,
mm-hmm.
and he was going to be the keynote speaker. And this admiral said, it's just the story doesn't fit. So he got Naval Intelligence to check him out, and then ended up with the FBI. And he was none of those. He had been a dropout recruit in the Navy for an aviator position at the end of the war, and that was it.
Hmm.
And all of the rest of it was totally fabricated. And the way he did it was interesting because we finally sort of sorted it all out. He had a literally a photographic memory. And he would go to these various conferences and listen to conversations. And he would piece all the pieces together like a giant filing cabinet. And then he'd say, yeah, I went to that high school with you. Remember, I lived in that house in the corner with the big tree. And the guy would go, oh, yeah. Well, nobody would ever question that once he knew the enough details. And he could just do that over and over again, and pretty soon he'd ratchet his way up, and he'd know one person, and then he'd know that person's friend, and then he'd be introduced, and pretty soon he was who he was.
Paul, thanks very much. I'm glad you found out.
Yeah, so are we.
All right, bye-bye. Stephen Bullock, there are a lot of characters like that in American history, including one you've written about, Tom Bell. Tell us a little bit about him.
Yeah, Tom Bell is an extraordinary figure. It sounds like this rear admiral sort of guy, somebody who knew how to handle himself in the world, and as a result is able to travel around America pretending to be someone else. Bell is originally trained to be somebody, part of the elite. He goes to Harvard College and is kicked out in 1733. Went to Boston Latin School, the same school that Benjamin Franklin went to. And within a few years after being thrown out of Harvard, you read about him in the newspaper traveling around pretending to be someone else. In Barbados in the Caribbean, he pretends to be the son of a governor of Massachusetts, and people are just so excited that they have this wonderful celebrity there. Sounds like the, you know, getting on board the ship sort of thing that Paul talked about.
Yeah.
And actually, when he is discovered, the most people can't even believe that this was the case. He actually sets off a riot because people are so angry at the people who discovered his frauds. They feel it's embarrassing that they put this great gentleman through this problem.
The settlement of the American West is also rich with tales of reinvented identities. And joining us now is Virginia Scharf, professor of history at the University of New Mexico, with us by phone from her home in Albuquerque, New Mexico. Good of you to be with us today.
Great talking to you.
And in a way, I think the whole story of the American West is fundamentally a story of reinvention.
Absolutely. And our greatest figures from Western history are almost all, to a woman and man, people who reinvented themselves by getting into the West or by making use of the West as a way of doing that reinvention.
Not necessarily taking on new names and identities, but in some cases they did.
Well, I guess, you know, some of their names were kind of close to what they were. If you take the case of Phoebe Ann Moses, who was a young girl growing up in poverty in Dark County, Ohio, and had one of those childhoods that absolutely trumps every other kind of childhood I ever heard of for sheer horror in terms of poverty and abuse and loneliness and hard work and having to make her way back to her family from people who she'd been hired out to and made a slave by, and finally does manage to do that and decide she's going to support her mother and her eight brothers and sisters by picking up a gun, and the next thing you know, she's reinvented herself as Annie Oakley.
And playing before the crowned heads of Europe with the Wild Bill Wild West show.
Absolutely, and if you think the whole Wild West show was full of people like that.
Calamity Jane, another figure who reinvented herself.
Yeah, born Martha Jane Canary. She's born to a woman of dubious repute, somebody who wasn't much of a mother to her, and by the time she was a young teenage girl, pretty much on her own, having to reinvent herself as a kind of hero in the American West. And this is a person who is famous for her wild and woolly exploits. She claimed to be a scout for Custer, and a bull whacker and a stage driver and everything else. And it looks like a lot of those claims were pretty much fueled by whiskey, for which she had a little bit too much of a taste. But somebody who reinvented herself every day.
Let me ask you both, is there a personality type? You mentioned whiskey, Virginia Scharf, but other than that, is there a personality type that seems to lend themselves to this? I guess you've got to be outgoing.
Well, you certainly have to be willing to tell a good tall tale, or at least that seems to be the case in the American West. And it's not just people who are famous, but I think, you know, the newspapers in the early 20th century in Los Angeles were full of stories about chauffeurs and their rich female employers, and these chauffeurs would basically beguile the women who hired them to drive them around in their limousines. The next thing they knew, they were marrying their chauffeurs, and then the third thing that would happen is that the chauffeurs would be revealed as bigamists. And it was pretty easy for them, basically, to go from one place to another and reinvent themselves in that way. So it seems to be a great Western tradition.
Stephen Bullock, is there a psychological type, do you think?
I think the odd thing about this sort of confidence person is there's a tension between, on one hand, meeting expectations. You know, this woman, Amy, who spoke of it, understood how people responded to her and changed as a result of that. And that's what these con artists are so good at, people who are reinventing themselves. But yet they're also...
Whoops, I think we just lost the line to Worcester, Massachusetts. So let's see if we can reestablish that. In the meantime, why don't we get another caller on the line? And this is Barbara. Barbara with us from Boise, Idaho.
Hi.
Hi, Barbara.
Well, I had two Uncle Bobs.
Really?
My one uncle took the other uncle's identity and taught his entire life. He even taught in a university.
Why did he do that?
Well, I think he was in trouble in his job, and so he moved away and took a different identity.
And what about the first Uncle Bob? Did he not mind being duplicated
like
this?
Yes, he did mind, but it was interesting because everybody in the family knew, but nobody blew the whistle on him.
Because he was doing it not for any nefarious or necessarily nefarious reason, but because, did he ever explain it?
No, nobody ever talked to him about it. It was the most amazing thing. And the interesting thing was he married a lady, and she changed her name, too.
What?
She even changed her first name.
Well, it's not uncommon when women are married to change their last name, but their first name, too.
Yeah, she changed her first name, too. So they both had changed their first name, and he taught his entire life on my other uncle's identity. I mean, his degree.
Really? So he didn't have a degree in whatever, law or medicine,
no,
whatever it was he was lecturing?
He had a high school education, and there he was, a university professor.
Well, Barbara, thanks very much. We won't ask what your last name is, whether it's real or not.
Well, no, mine's real.
Thanks very much for the call, Barbara, and good luck to both your Uncle Bobs.
Bye.
Bye-bye. I think Professor Bullock is back with us from Worcester, Massachusetts. Are you there, sir?
Yes, I am.
Getting back to that question, but what about the psychological types of, you know, we keep hearing the admiral claim that he had the Congressional Medal of Honor. The guy in Alabama said the Mensa membership. You know, if you just be a little bit more modest, you'd get away with it.
I think there's an excitement about fooling people about in some cases with Tom Bell, you know, rising to really what you thought, where you thought you should be. There's a sense, I think, in them that they should be important people. And so it's merely an accident of birth or of action that they don't really have all those credentials. So they're willing to go ahead and make them up.
Virginia Scharf, there are, again, getting back to the story of the West, I mean, of course you're changing jobs, you're changing your style of life. It's a fundamentally changing experience. But the history of the mountain men, they had to undergo a lot of changes because the frontier itself changed so quickly.
Oh, yeah. I mean, they pretty much had to reinvent themselves every time they came into a new situation. And if you think about people like William Bent, who was the guy who founded Bent's Fort and basically comes out to the American West, and he or Kit Carson or any of these other guys who want to trap and trade have to basically reinvent themselves as family men among the Cheyenne or among the Arapaho or among the Pawnees. And the next thing you know, they've got somebody who's helping them trap, and that would be a Pawnee wife, often somebody who's related to a prominent family. They basically marry into power, and they become, in some sense, you know, they're seen as going native, and they've reinvented themselves in this very mixed and very interesting and dynamic world. And it's only when the kind of white world overtakes them in the form of more men and women coming from the East to the West that they have to reinvent themselves again as kind of the people who would be conquering rather than adapting to the world they've come to live in.
Virginia Scharf, thanks so much for taking the time to be with us today.
Oh, thank you for inviting me.
Virginia Scharf, a professor of history at the University of New Mexico, who joined us by phone from her home in Albuquerque, New Mexico. Our thanks as well to Stephen Bullock, a professor of history at Worcester Polytechnical Institute, in Worcester, Massachusetts. He was with us today from the studios of member station WICN in Worcester, Massachusetts. Thank you for taking the time, sir.
Thank you for having me.
And let's see if we can get another caller on the line. This is Bob. Bob calling us from Tulsa, Oklahoma.
Yeah, hi.
Hi.
Well, like I told your lady I talked to, in 75, when I was 15, I came across the birth certificate of a cousin that was born a year before I was and who had died after when he was about 6 months old.
Mm-hmm.
And I was in the process of getting my own driver's license and birth certificate, and kind of as a lark, I got one under that name as well, Social Security card and driver's license. And I had used it a little bit when I was younger, and I was a teenager. I worked part-time jobs under that name. I'd pull that driver's license out, and then I've never actually lived under it, but I've kept it active all those years. I've filed tax returns. I've worked part-time jobs almost every year under that name.
Why?
Social Security taxes. It's kind of, now it feels like a security blanket. I'm in my 40s. I guess later on I had a feeling if something went wrong with my life, I could always drop it and go to this one.
Just in case, a parachute.
Yeah, it's kind of like a fully established identity.
Huh. And you obviously got to do a fair amount of work to sustain it.
Well, yeah, I have to renew the driver's license every few years. And I've worked a part-time job anywhere from 2 weeks to one time nearly a year under that name and paid taxes and everything.
All right, Bob, good luck, and I hope you, I don't know, good luck.
Yeah, I don't intend to do anything with it, just have it.
All right.
Thanks a lot.
Appreciate the phone call. Right. We're talking about reinvention, and you're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And joining us now is Ted Morgan. Ted Morgan was formerly a French count, Le Comte Saint-Armand Gabriel de Gramont. He is now known simply as Ted Morgan. I hope I didn't massacre the name too badly. He's the author of My Battle of Algiers and among many other books. He joins us now from NPR's Bureau in New York. And, sir, nice to have you on the program today.
Pleasure to be here.
You were actually a French count, a member of the aristocracy. Your father was a famous hero of the French Resistance during the Second World War. Now an American writer. Why did you decide to renounce your membership in the French aristocracy?
Well, I had the choice between two identities. My French aristocracy identity, and having spent years in this country, my American meritocracy identity. And having tried both, I preferred the American meritocracy, when you succeed by your own effort rather than by your name and your title. And a friend of mine said I was a case of downward nobility.
Downward nobility. In a way, that's an American concept, too.
Mm. And so I changed my name.
Ted Morgan is an anagram of your name.
It's an anagram, and one reason I did that was because it's more pronounceable. And there was a silversmith who came to the United States in 1770 called De Rivoire, and he changed his name to Revere, and he said it was so the bumpkins can pronounce it more easy. And he had a son named Paul.
Who took up silversmithing and horseback riding, famously.
Yeah, so, and the other reason I changed my name was to disassociate myself from my French background. And it wasn't really a question of reinventing myself. It was more of a question of where I felt most like myself, because when I was in France, having spent going back and forth all the time, I felt that I was pretending to be somebody I wasn't, whereas when I came back to America, I felt more comfortable.
And you don't keep this any sort of a secret, of course.
Oh, God, no. There's no secret at all. Mm-hmm. I'm on very good terms with my French family, and they're all coming over here now. And it was simply a matter of the accident of growing up partly here and partly there, and having to decide where you felt more yourself and where you felt you weren't playing a role.
And you've written books under both names.
I did write under both names, but I actually did write one book in French. And another reason that I preferred to live in America was that I like the language better.
Ted Morgan, we have to take a short break. Stay with us, if you will. We're talking about reinvention of your identity. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. But let's wrap up our conversation about reinventing yourself. We began this conversation, well, first of all, let's go back to Ted Morgan. Ted Morgan is with us from our bureau in New York. He was born a French count, has moved entirely to this country. He's written books under both of his names. And Ted Morgan, do you now consider yourself fully American?
Oh, I do. And I'd like to make one an interesting point, which is that the person who pretends to be an English lord may turn out to be a better English lord than the real English lord because he works harder at it. And there's a story by Somerset Maugham called The Lion's Skin about just such a man who dresses right and has learned to speak like a lord and do everything like a lord, to the point that he goes into a burning house to rescue a small dog because that's what a lord would do, and he dies in the fire.
Interesting. The Lord apparently did the same technique as in a fictional story in The Day of the Jackal, a new identity created by finding the tombstone of someone born about the same date that you were but died as a small child. This man known in the British newspapers as the real Jackal. I'm not sure whether that's a Lord-like characteristic, but some would say so.
Yeah. It's the idea of reinventing yourself is what you make of it. You know, if you do it to be dishonest or if you do it as a scam, that's one thing. But if you do it, somehow you can reach your higher purpose that way.
Ted Morgan, thanks very much for being with us today. We appreciate your time. Ted Morgan moved to the United States and created a new identity. He's the author of My Battle of Algiers, among many other books. We began this program talking about Robert Madrid, a man who was discovered in Anniston, Alabama, to have fabricated an identity, did not go to Harvard Medical School, was not a member of Mensa, was not a graduate of MIT. And joining us now from Salt Lake City in Utah is a woman named Selena, who says she is the ex-wife of Robert Madrid.
Yes, sad to say, but I am.
And did he fool you, too?
Absolutely, absolutely. And, you know, the funny thing is, when I did find out, I actually went to his boss, who was the retired Anniston police chief officer, and nobody believed me. Nobody believed me for 2 years. I came back to Salt Lake for 2 years. Nobody believed me, and I get a call, you know, from the DA's office. We have some questions about your ex-husband.
And finally, they had the dime had dropped and they'd figured out what was going on. When did you find out that he was not who he claimed to be?
Wow. You know, it was about maybe a year after we were married. And he was very good. And he fooled everybody, everybody from, you know, the police, the radio talk host, you know, on KJQ or one of the radios. And, you know, he fooled everybody. You know, he said he was Jewish, I converted, and that was a lie, everything. And you just don't know sometimes when they're that good, and he was so intelligent that he could really pull it off. He could have been a doctor if he wanted to.
You converted?
I did. He said, you know, you've got to do this, make our marriage work, you know. So I, you know, he was so good at convincing, and he was just so good at everything.
It must be, I mean, a bad marriage, bad enough, but pardon me for saying this, but you got to feel like an idiot.
Yes, you know, and I did feel stupid for a little while, but it wasn't just me he fooled. I mean, he was able to call and get in right at the doctor's office because they believed he was a doctor. You know, everybody did. His parents supposedly did.
Uh-huh.
So,
We were talking to people in Annecy earlier on, and obviously you heard that on the radio, so they were taken in as well. Just as you look back on it now, I mean, were his stories consistent? I mean, he seemed to overblow so many of the things. The Mensa membership?
I know, and I laugh about that. But, you know, there were little things along the way that would change. He'd say the same story, like at a barbecue, and then he'd say it again a month later, and it was a little different. And so as soon as we moved to Anniston, I just started going through his stuff when he was at work, and, you know, he hadn't paid his taxes ever.
Ever?
I mean, ever. The DA's office found only one real job he's ever had, a real paying job, and that was at a snack bar at a golf course. So,
Everything
was fake.
Are you still Jewish?
No, I'm not. I found myself through all of this too, so it was good. You know, we learned something. You know, with every experience, right?
I guess so. Selena, thanks very much for the call. We appreciate it.
Thank you,
Selena, calling us from Salt Lake City. In Utah, well, from the annals of real life to a life undercover in fiction.